Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is Jordan Miller. Jordan, thank you for joining me.
Hailing frequencies open, Scott.
Excellent. And Jordan, you are related to a previous guest of Random Trek, related in that you are married to Carrie Miller.
Yes, indeed. She was the guest for the podcast episode, The Andorian Incident, number 88.
So in the not-too-distant past of Random Trek, we did not get an Enterprise episode this time. We're talking about a Deep Space Nine episode, which makes me happier than Enterprise episodes. In particular, we're talking about Rules of Acquisition, second season, seventh episode. But before we jump into that, we have to do our traditional kind of grilling. And also, I didn't even give you a chance, Jordan, to tell us a little bit about yourself. I was so excited to talk about Deep Space Nine. So tell us a little bit. Now, we know you're married to Carrie, but other than that, what would you like to tell the people a little bit about?
Other than that, I guess the usual sort of resume facts, I guess. I have a degree in electrical engineering and German, which is often a conversation starter.
German is the language of science.
Well, I agree, and there's more backstory too, but I don't want to bore you with the details. And I currently work. What I want to say is, to protect myself and my employer, all I should say is that I work with inventory at a retail outlet for a well-established personal electronics corporation. So take that or leave it.
Yeah, but you can imagine what company that may or may not be. I'm assuming it's some kind of German multinational company. But
oh, I'm sure it is. Anyway.
What is that? Well, is it Bluepunt? There's some German company that makes sound equipment, which name escapes me. It doesn't matter. Anyway.
There's got to be at least one out there that does that.
But anyway. I'm sure there's. It's a beautiful language, German. But we're not here to talk about German or electronics, although electronics kind of related, I suppose. We're here to talk about Star Trek. And I think I already know the answer to this question, as I so often do with the guests on Random Trek, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Jordan, would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
I would indeed. And in fact, I can point to specific attributes of myself that would qualify that.
I would like you to do that.
I mean, I guess historically speaking, I got into Star Trek sort of around age 10. It was 1995, and Star Trek Voyager had just started up. And I'd had some exposure to Star Trek at a younger age than that. I remember, you know, even before I could really understand what was going on, my family was watching, I guess they had just been released on video, the Star Trek movies. Mm-hmm. And they were, I mean, kind of scary, I guess, to a degree, you know, when you're only six or 7 years old. I don't even remember how old I was exactly, but even though I was kind of afraid of them, they caught my interest. I knew that my dad was a Star Trek fan who watched the original series as he was, you know, growing up. And I was familiar with some of the Next Generation, but I didn't really get into it. So I consider Star Trek Voyager to be sort of my own, you know, my own personal interest in Star Trek. That's where it kicked in. And because I hadn't seen any of Deep Space Nine at all, I didn't even realize that it was continuing a sort of an existing universe of Star Trek since then. So as I learned more about Star Trek, I got more and more into it. But as of now, it's since there's, it's hard to say whether Star Trek is kind of making a comeback or if they're just trying to revive, you know, sort of resuscitate what was already there. There's different, obviously we could debate this all day. I have enjoyed the recent stuff that's come out, and I'm curious to see what this new CBS series is going to show us. But it's just sort of enough to keep me, you know, conversation about Star Trek, even though most of what I'm familiar with is from, you know, at least a decade old or more.
Well, it is interesting. Star Trek is in an interesting point in its existence now. And I think culturally it's an interesting moment as well, since, you know, I think it is well established now that, you know, geek, quote unquote, geek culture is kind of now mainstream culture. Plus, when you've got, you know, superhero movies dominating the box office every summer, Star Wars being the biggest thing ever. And so Star Trek is poised, one would imagine, to be as popular as either Marvel or Star Wars. And yet, it seems kind of far away from that as well. And I don't know why, but
yeah, maybe there's just maybe a lack of vision or something. It's hard to say for sure. But, well, I incidentally, this year, 2016 marks the 50th anniversary of the original broadcast of the original series, 1966. Mm-hmm. So, the fact that I believe, the third Star Trek movie is coming out this year. So I don't think they're intending it to be kind of a 50th anniversary, even though it coincidentally is during the 50th anniversary year. Anyway, but
and you would think they would play that up, but they don't seem to be.
Yeah, Doctor Who did that, so you'd think that Star Trek would be more interested. But it just, I haven't seen anything that sort of points toward that.
Although they do have, and I went to this, there's a concert celebrating Star Trek and the music of Star Trek that's going touring around. And when I came to Philadelphia, I went to it, the Tower Theater, for people in Philadelphia who care about music venues. And it was a lot of fun. They basically play on a giant screen iconic scenes from all of the series, although kind of very heavily slanted toward the original series, and play the music that accompanied them. So if it's coming to your town, check it out.
Interesting. And yes. Well, and that reminds me too, one thing I've always appreciated about Star Trek is the music, because that, you know, with their original series had, you know, just about everybody knows that theme music and of course the incidental music. But when the movies came along, they, for various reasons, chose different composers for the different movies. And that kind of gave it a sort of a, I don't know what the right term is, some sort of a cross-pollination of interesting styles of music. And of course, the series all have their own music, and it's just and you and Carrie discussed the Enterprise theme music.
Yes,
when she was a guest.
Now, I think she may have intonated to me that you enjoy the Enterprise theme song. Now, I don't know, I may be misremembering this, so maybe you should explain yourself. What is your feelings about the Enterprise theme music?
Well, I mean, enjoy is kind of a strong word. I feel like for what it is, for the circumstances, it's appropriate. I guess the particular tune or the style of that music almost sounds kind of country, and that doesn't seem that appropriate for a space adventure, I guess, unless you consider that Star Trek is kind of a space western. That's the only connection I can make. But I like where the lyrics point to, which is that it's especially the opening lines. It's been a long road getting from there to here, and it's kind of, in my mind, referring to all of Star Trek that we've already seen, and suddenly here we are back at the beginning. Kind of saying, wow, these people have so much in store for them they don't even know. But beyond that, I don't have a whole lot of commentary on the song. I like the imagery from the opening theme. Those few opening lines, it just really speak strongly to what this series is all about, kind of pointing toward the future that they don't even understand themselves yet, but we've seen some of.
It just annoys me that it has lyrics, but
it does take a deviation in that sense. Yes. But if they're going to have lyrics, I guess those couple opening lines I do appreciate.
Yeah, they're not bad. They could have done. It just strikes me now that you're talking about. I do like the opening lines. It just annoys me that they are lyrics to a song. They could have done the good old voiceover, which is a staple of Star Trek.
The closing theme is just instrumental anyway, so you think they could have inverted those or just had an optional,
exactly,
like a second audio stream if you
on the Blu-rays. Exactly, I don't have to hear this again.
There you go.
There are other things that are annoying me about Enterprise more.
Yeah,
but let's talking. We don't want to linger on things we don't like about Star Trek. We want to celebrate Star Trek. I don't want to become the podcast known as Knocking Star Trek.
Oh, not at all. But if I could say just a little bit more about what some evidence of my Star Trek fandom.
Yes, please do.
It's simply that, for example, I've just sort of looked at my all my personal devices, like a computer, phone, other things. I realized I've named them all according to something from Star Trek and something that makes sense. For example, my iPhone is called Tricorder because it's basically the thing I use to scan for threats in my vicinity and try to avoid them, for one thing. Incidentally, you can turn it around, you can turn it upside down, and it still gives you proper readings, just like Spock has done apparently in the original series, holding it upside down. Anyway, and like my one of my favorites is my Mac Pro, which is the newer, the cylinder shaped Mac Pro, is named Nomad. Because of Nomad, the sort of the cylindrical floating robot from the original series as well. And other little tidbits as well, like my Wi-Fi base station at Airport Extreme is called Space Dock, sort of the central hub of activity for anything, related to subspace around here. Little things like that. It's all my computers and devices are named after, things that are straight out of Star Trek. So I do believe that I can be undeniably qualified as a fan.
Well, I'm recording this on an iMac as I speak, and I looked to see what I had called my iMac, and sadly, apparently, I am boring because it is called iMac.
My iMac is called Dominion.
See, yours is better. I did have an iMac that was called Vercingetorix, which has nothing to do with Star Trek, but a little ancient history. But that's neither here nor there. I am sitting very close to a model of Deep Space Nine, though, so I think that saves my Star Trek credentials. But let's say, I've been asking this intermittently. I keep trying to do it every episode, but I forget because I'm stupid. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being you are aware of Star Trek, 10 being you have gone to a convention dressed in a Star Trek costume. Where would you rate yourself in your Star Trek fandom?
Well, I would be inclined to say a 10. The only reason I wouldn't say a 10 is because last time I went to a convention, this is as a youngster, of course, I don't remember if I was wearing a uniform, but it was actually a family affair. So the fact that my whole family was in on it, I think, points to, you know, sort of that genealogy of Star Trek, I believe. Yeah. But anyway, the only reason I wouldn't say 10 is because somebody could maybe pick something out of my life and say, well, in this case, you didn't defend Star Trek, so you clearly aren't a 10. But for myself, I would say 10 on a scale of 1 to 10 for fandom.
Luckily, I think this the scale is less stringent than that, so I don't think anyone's going to delve back into your personal history to make you prove that your 10 is correct. So
yeah, I've got all my documentation to prove that I'm a fan right in front of me, so I think I'll be safe.
That's true. I think you're safe, and you're in a safe space now. Don't worry. So you're a 10, and now I actually don't know the answer to this question, but I may have an inkling, perhaps. But if you had to pick a favorite series, and you're going to have to because I'm going to ask you in like 2 seconds, what series would you pick?
Well, I think, as I mentioned before, Voyager was kind of the series I consider to be my own. And even if it's not the best, I feel like I have to say that's my favorite just because I have such a strong connection with it. And I think, as Carrie pointed out, just because it may not be the best doesn't mean it can't be your favorite. So
very true.
It's definitely, I'm sort of banking on that statement.
So Voyager is perhaps, I wouldn't go as far to say controversial, but it can engender some deep opinions one way or the other. And I think it mostly has to do with Captain Janeway and your feelings mm-hmm. about her one way or the other. Because the other characters, you know, the captain is the most important character on any of the franchises. So if you don't like the captain, like for Enterprise, for example, I think there are many issues with Enterprise. One of them is that I think that the Captain Archer is super boring. Mm-hmm. And so that makes it hard for me to enjoy the whole series. So who's your favorite, character on Voyager?
Favorite character on Voyager? I feel like I would have to choose the Doctor, just cause his story arc is one that spans throughout the entire series. Whereas other characters, some of them come and go, which is odd for a ship that's stranded in space. others are just, you know, some of them are meant to be very strong, consistent characters like Captain Janeway. You know, she's pretty unwavering throughout her entire, appearance and, other members of the bridge crew. But the Doctor, you know, we see his arc going from trapped in the sick bay to being able to travel anywhere and ultimately being the first to go back home because of he was able to transmit his program over the subspace channel. So just that complete development of a character I think is very intriguing. And I like his sense of humor as well, or lack thereof, you might say.
And it's interesting, I think that the Doctor and Data are probably two characters that if you watch early seasons of either Voyager or TNG, you get a very specific character from them. And then as you watch later seasons, they're not completely different characters, but they've been developed over the course of the seasons. Whereas, since both Voyager and TNG were super episodic, so they didn't tend to have big story arcs like we got in later, like Deep Space Nine, and Enterprise. Voyager had a little bit of it, but not a whole heck of a lot. So generally the character arcs did not arc across seasons, but I think those two characters are kind of prototypical of what happens in the later Star Treks with character development. So
that's true. Yeah, they were both modeled after their creators. That's certainly commonality. It almost seems like in Voyager they wanted to say, well, how can we get an android in here without having an actual android just to be a carbon copy of Data, you know? So I think they did a good job of, you know, having that archetype without being, you know, exactly the same as Data. I mean, they could have gotten away with it if they wanted to just have another Dr. Soong robot on there, but I like the direction they took.
Yeah, I think that it was a wise choice on their part. And the Doctor probably is, I think Captain Janeway probably is my favorite character in Voyager. The Doctor, a close second. And Seven of Nine, probably third. And then it falls off very steeply after that. I like Tuvok. I like, I can't even think of her name now.
Kes or Seven of Nine?
The engineer.
Or B'Elanna.
B'Elanna, there you go. I can't think of her name. I block her out because she likes Tom Paris and I don't like Tom Paris. I'm well known not liking Harry Kim because he angers me. And of course, Neelix. Who likes Neelix? Nobody.
Yeah, he's an interesting. It's funny that they sort of dropped him off before they even got home. So, but it's interesting because Tom Paris, I feel like there's a missed opportunity with his character because that same actor played a hotshot at the Academy in a Next Generation episode. You know, sort of got Wesley Crusher in trouble, and his whole thing was that he was one of the top pilots and was kicked out of the Academy. Well, then in Voyager we see a character who was sort of a rebel who is a top pilot and has had some trouble in the Academy. So it's why couldn't they have just made it to be the same character? I don't know. I feel like that would have been a stronger bond between series, but they just, for some reason, chose not to do that.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe they decided on the character before they hired the actor, but...
Maybe. But you would think even after, they could have easily changed that before they started. It's just a character name, right? And then they could have had that nice little hook into TNG, but that always perplexed me as well.
Yeah, I'm glad somebody else noticed.
No, I totally did. So we're not here to talk about Voyager, or The Next Generation, or Enterprise. But we are here to talk about Deep Space Nine, which is, as listeners of this podcast know, my favorite Star Trek series, and I think also the best Star Trek series. Not because it is my favorite, but because later seasons, as I was talking about, have these super long story arcs, and they really do a lot to develop the characters. This is an early episode of Deep Space Nine, so this gives us a hint, and kind of actually the first mention of the Dominion, I think, is in this episode. So it's a critical moment in Deep Space Nine, but it doesn't hook into these, you know, operatic several episode arcs.
You miss one episode, you're lost in the story.
Exactly.
So we're not quite there yet, which is good. It's nice to be able to just pick up and watch an episode.
Especially when we're watching them in random order.
Yes, exactly.
Which I fear when I get one of those episodes for Random Trek, when it's like, you know, the fifth of a 7-story arc. How am I going to handle that? But that's a problem for future Scott. Present Scott doesn't need to worry about it.
There you go.
So this episode, Rules of Acquisition, I should say. There are more than one. There are, what, 238? 41? I don't know. A lot.
I saw the number once, and I can't remember what it is.
There are many Rules of Acquisition. And all Ferengi, probably except for Rom, know them all by heart. Poor Rom. And this is, of course, this is a heavily populated episode of Ferengi. It is a Ferengi-specific episode. There are all your favorite other Deep Space Nine characters make appearances, although I don't think Chief O'Brien makes an appearance in this episode.
He does. I remember seeing him as, I don't know the character's name, the Negus's assistant, going back down. He's scurrying back down the turbo lift. Then O'Brien is sort of trying to flag him down. Anyway. Yes.
Hello, fellow human. I'd like to tell you about today's sponsor, Casper Mattresses. Obsessively engineered, American-made mattresses at a shockingly fair price. And now you can get $50 toward any mattress purchased by going to casper.com/trek and using the code TREK. Listen, you spend about a third of your life sleeping. Let's make sure you're doing it on a good mattress. I think the Enterprise has Casper mattresses. Just the right sink, just the right bounce, two technologies, a hybrid of latex foam, and memory foam, as we all know, my two favorite foams. They've got a risk-free trial and return policy. They'll deliver it straight to you. You can try it for 100 days, and if you're not happy, they'll pick it back up. At the store, maybe you'll get a minute to try their mattresses. With Casper, you'll actually get to sleep on it. If you try that in a mattress store, they'll ask you to leave. It's $500 for a twin-size mattress and $950 for a king-size mattress. Compare that to industry averages. That's an outstanding price point. So, get $50 towards any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/trek and using the code TREK. Terms and conditions apply. Thanks to Casper. So let's talk a little bit about the Ferengi in general. Uh-huh. They are perhaps a problematic race of folks in the Star Trek universe, known for their great love of money. They are basically the opposite of everything that a Federation person is. They are obsessed with money. They do not allow their women to travel or wear clothes.
Or do anything, really.
Exactly. Other than, I suppose, create little Ferengi and do whatever the male Ferengis want them to do. And they are not very, they're not known as being trustworthy. They're kind of cowards. And yet, Quark is one of the greatest characters in Deep Space Nine, especially when he is, you know, butting up against Odo or any of the other Starfleet folks. And it's just nice to have, I don't think Gene Roddenberry would really appreciate the Ferengi, but it's nice to have this race of people and these characters that have so wildly different motivation than the rest of the characters on the show to kind of just be like an agent of chaos and throw things off.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like the chaotic, I don't know if I would qualify them chaotic good or chaotic evil, but it's somewhere in that spectrum.
Yeah, that's hard. Sometimes I think Quark may be chaotic neutral. Sometimes he has his good nature gets the best of him, and then you can tell it annoys him, but he can't help it.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting you mentioned Gene Roddenberry, because I know he must have been in on the initial development of the mm-hmm. Ferengi as a character type. Just because, and they, I looked this up, they made their first appearance, the Ferengi, in the Next Generation, like the fifth episode of the entire series, called The Last Outpost. And I remember watching that for the first time, and this is, as Carrie mentioned, when we watched them all in order. I hadn't seen that one before, and I was like, interesting, because I knew enough about the Ferengi from outside sources to know that these were not some kind of a big threat as the show was making them out to be, sort of this mysterious alien race that nobody had really ever known much about, and they have to chase them down somewhere. And then it turns out they're, you know, like sniveling, you know, greedy little guys. And it's just apparently they were supposed to be like, they were going to try to make them into the primary villains while trying to keep away from the whole Star Trek, the original series's take on Romulans and Klingons, sort of the traditional, villains of that series. They wanted to use, anybody but them. And I think the Ferengi were their first idea, but then when they realized that they were not very threatening at all, then they pursued something else. And ultimately, I think because the Borg were such a big hit originally, you know, appeared in the first episode after all, yes. Then the Borg became the primary villains, or at least, you know, keep on reappearing throughout the legacy of Next Generation and beyond. And I think that's a much better decision. So it's just very interesting to consider, what if we'd had a Star Trek where the Ferengi were the primary villain of the future? And it's just, in some ways they kind of are. But I think it's interesting that you mentioned Quark as well as being, you know, a really strong character in DS9. And I agree. It's also interesting that apparently he played a different character in this episode 5 of The Next Generation, introducing the Ferengi. He was one of them.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he was. What's his name? Armin Shimmerman.
Yeah.
And, so apparently he was there. I don't know if that's what helped him, make a deal mixing up my shows here, Deep Space Nine. But in any case, it certainly couldn't have hurt. So it's just interesting that we sort of have that full circle on that actor and his ability to portray a Ferengi. If you call that a circle, maybe it's just a line segment anyway. it's just an interesting connection I found. But yeah, so the first time I saw the Ferengi, I was like, well, they don't, I know they're not actually very mysterious. They're just kind of annoying in a lot of ways. So it's just, it's funny that the episode made us believe that there was this big new threat.
Yeah. And I think in that episode, they also had, energy whips or disruptor whips or something that we never see again.
Oh yeah. Something I do. That does ring a bell.
They had some kind of whips. Whip technology is very advanced on Franganar, but, apparently, yeah. And so it's interesting. Some people, there are problematic aspects to the Ferengi. Of course, you know, their treatment of women, not great, but that's kind of, you know, in this episode, I wouldn't say, well, it is kind of the central theme of the whole episode, right? Because yes. Let's just jump, I'll do the high level plot synopsis. It's pretty simple. The Grand Nagus, who is, I'm unclear.
The CEO of Ferenginar, maybe?
I guess, I exactly. It's hard to, I guess the Grand Nagus is the, I'm looking at Memory Alpha right now. So he's the leader of the Ferengi Alliance. So he is their economic and political leader. So he's a CEO / president, I guess. He's like Donald Trump wants to be.
There you go.
Ripped from the headlines, people. This is why you listen to the podcast. So he's arrived on Deep Space Nine. He wants the Quark to lead this trade party to get what is the most lucrative opportunity he thinks that the Ferengi have ever had, and Quark is very excited because, of course, he just has this one bar, and he wants more Latinum, basically. And he has this new waiter who is like, hey, you should be careful, I have some good ideas, and all kinds of stuff. So quickly, he takes this waiter into his confidence. The waiter becomes his assistant. It turns out that the Grand Nagus wants him to get tuliberry wine from the Dosai. He wants 10,000 vats And later he decides he wants 100,000 vets. The Dosai are kind of the opposite of the Ferengi. They're all beefy, aggressive folks who are not so interested in giving 10,000 vets of tulip berry wine, let alone 100,000 vets, because they can't even get 100,000 vets. Through a series of misadventures, they figure out that they need to talk to another species in the quadrant who is part of the Dominion, and that is actually what the Grand Negus wanted, because he wants to get a foothold in the Dominion so that the Ferengi can become basically, I think he says, we get a foot in the quadrant and they will never get us out, which is funny.
Good business.
Exactly. And we find out that Pell, who is this waiter who has a great head for business, or great lobes for business, as the Ferengi say, is a female, which puts Quark in a difficult position. Rom tells Quark. Quark is upset, but he is like, well, Pell is still really good at business, so maybe we can, you know, Pell can just leave and no one will be the wiser. She is not having it. She goes to the Grand Negus and rips off her lobes. The Grand Negus is shocked and is going to throw her in prison for the rest of her life, and then going to throw Quark in prison. And Quark says, you can't, because you didn't know yourself. And so the Grand Negus says, okay, I'll take all of your profits from the Dominion and we'll pretend this never happens. Quark and Pell have a kiss, and then Pell leaves, and Quark hits on Dax half-heartedly.
Yeah, resetting the status quo.
Exactly. So that, at the high level, is what happens in this episode. And so central to this, of course, is the whole idea of, a female Ferengi, and should they just stay on Ferenginar naked and not talking unless spoken to. And I think the episode clearly says Kira Nerys, who... it is amusing. The Grand Negus has a crush on her, basically. Or maybe that may be putting it in too mild of terms. He seems enamored with her. She does not share his enamored status. And she's basically disgusted about how the Ferengi treat women. And she doesn't understand how Dax hangs out with Ferengi all the time. And Dax says, well, that's because you don't hang out with Ferengi, and they have a different culture, and we have to respect them.
There's a lot of eyes rolling during that during those scenes where anybody's trying to defend the sexism of the Ferengi. But I kind of thought about that. I guess if anybody is going to be defending them, then it would be Dax, because Dax is a species whose sole existence is dependent on being passive and just living inside other species. So it's kind of like, well, I guess I don't expect much talk back from very, very passive species. And I think Kira, on the other hand, is the voice of just about any sensible person. And so at least we have that to fall back on.
That's true. And Sisko, who has some interactions with the Grand Negus, they don't really talk about, you know, where the social policies of the Ferengi. He's just talking about business. He kind of takes a bribe from the Grand Negus and also kind of extorts the Grand Negus, because the Grand Negus wants to have this meeting on Deep Space Nine, and he apparently has some kind of 50,000 tons of some fertilizer that Bajor needs. So he offers to give it to Bajor if they'll let them have his meeting. And of course, giving in Ferengi means you get a 25% discount.
Yes.
Which there are many amusing scenes in this episode. And then, of course, you know, Captain Sisko is like, although at this moment he's, I guess, Commander Sisko, says, how about you just, as a gesture of goodwill, give the fertilizer to Bajor, to which the Grand Negus says, I don't see the profit in that. Mm-hmm. So that was an amusing scene.
Yeah. But it shows one of Sisko's strengths is being very resolute and able to sort of use whatever sort of, in this case, maybe even a sort of a business threat, mm-hmm. to turn the tables and say, well, you know, if you want to be profitable, then how about you do any business at all? And you can only do that with my say-so. I think for as little as we see Sisko in this episode, I do like that he has a very strong, makes a very strong point, and, you know, shows that, you know, if he can manipulate the Grand Negus, of course, then I'm sure he's got some respect to him. I already knew that, but for anybody that might not, then I do like Sisko.
Yeah, I like Sisko a lot, and it proves that he is good at kind of reading the situation and negotiating with, you know, pulling the right levers when needed.
Because he's got people skills on his resume.
That's right. And a baseball in his hand at all times.
Yeah, of course.
because he's obsessed with baseball. I don't understand it, but I also don't understand why people in our current modern times are obsessed with baseball. So
that's something relatable, I guess, if they're trying to get more baseball fans to watch Star Trek, I guess that was the best avenue.
Underserved demographic in the advertising, and they just wanted to get more. Although I did like that episode where the Vulcans come and they play baseball with the Vulcans. But
I do remember that. It's very good.
Pell is a woman, and she's really good at business, better than Quark. And let's be honest, Quark, not the greatest business Ferengi. You get the sense that he has this one bar that's kind of on a backwater star station, star base, and that's about it. And he's got lots of irons in the fire, but as Ferengi go, he's kind of small potatoes.
It almost seems like he's breaking his own rule. I feel like the only reason he's there is because of the relationships he's established. And so if he's placing friendship over profit, he's breaking one of those rules of acquisition. So I think maybe he does care more than he lets on.
And I think that's what makes Quark such an interesting character, because it's clear that he does, in fact, he could leave Deep Space Nine, or he could just let Rom, you know, kind of franchise Quark's bar, and then he gets open up Quark's all over the place. But he doesn't do that because he doesn't want to leave Deep Space Nine. He doesn't want to leave Deep Space Nine. And there's only one reason to stay on Deep Space Nine, and it's because of the people that you know there. Because let's face it, it doesn't seem like a great place to live.
Yeah, even Morn, who's actually the first character we see in this episode. I love that there was actually an episode about him and him gone missing, I believe, where Quark was talking. And of course, he's the alien that doesn't have any facial expression whatsoever, but Quark was, you know, reminiscing about his smile and just how much they missed him. Yeah, he's just very on the nose there. I just love that.
Yeah, and I completely forgot that. But yeah, the episode opens with Morn sleeping on the promenade, and Odo saying, you know, you can't sleep here, Morn. You got to go home. And you think, oh, maybe we'll get to see where Morn lives, because Morn is one of these characters who's in the background.
Oh, yes, he's just always there.
He's just there, and people talk to him, talk about him. He doesn't respond. He just sits at the bar. And you think, well, maybe, and of course he walks to Quark's, and then we switch to an interior shot and where Quark and Rom are talking. And you can see in the background, Morn just kind of looking in the window, hoping that they will open and let him sit at the bar. I just find it amusing. And there's another amusing scene as well where, the Quark, is talking with the Grand Nagus, I think, maybe in the foreground, and then Rom kind of beckons him into the background, and so he goes off in the background, and we get a shot. The shot doesn't change, and we see Rom and Quark in the background talking, and we can't hear what they're saying, and then Quark passes out, because that's when Rom has told him that Pell is a woman, and it's a capital offense in Ferenginar to do business with a woman, I guess, and have a woman wear clothes. I don't know.
Do anything, really. Yeah, and a woman doing anything is a crime.
Yes, I find I'm not quite sure how the Ferengi managed to become a star-faring race with such beliefs, but
it doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, I feel like they wanted to have that element just to sort of emphasize how bad sexism can be and how it extends, you know, even into the future with other species. But I mean, and I agree with Carrie. It's kind of like, you know, we don't need to be reminded about how bad some of these things are, something like sexism, for example. So to that degree, I feel like I don't know why they needed to play it up. But if it's part of Quark's, character arc of, you know, being more sensible, then I guess it's a point in their favor, but it's just hard to justify, you know, having sexism be like a main point, even if it's trying to show how bad it is.
Right.
It may not even need to be there at all. Anyway, I've never been a victim of sexism, so I don't want to be the one to sort of be the spokesperson for that. So that's all I should say, but just to point that out.
No, I agree. Also, not, I assume I've never been a victim of sexism. So, I don't know. It's like the John Scalzi thing. I'm playing life at the easiest setting. So it's hard for me to, opine about any of this with any authority. Although I do think it was interesting. So she's dressed as a man, and everyone assumes that she's a man because you never see Ferengi women because they're not allowed to wear clothes or go out. So one assumes it's not that difficult for a Ferengi woman to dress up like a man and be convincing, because nobody's ever seen a Ferengi woman.
Yeah, there you go.
And so Dax is, there's a scene with Dax talking to Pell, and, you know, they're talking about, well, Pell, I guess, is eating non-Ferengi food, which is something that most Ferengi don't do because they just want to eat bugs and dried spiders or whatever the Grand Negus was eating. to, once again, further the alien and kind of disgusting nature of the Ferengi. And so she's not eating that. And Dax is like, oh, I've never seen a Ferengi not eat Ferengi food. And she says, I like to try different things. And they talk about Quark and how, you know, Dax really likes Quark as a friend, clearly. and Pell says that she loves Quark. Although at this point, Dax thinks that Pell is a man. And Dax, you know, she's like, oh, I totally knew that you loved him, and, you know, I think that's great. And then she says, yeah, and I'm a woman, and Dax is like, you're a woman? So I thought that was a great moment when, you know, because Star Trek gets some knocks, rightfully so, I think, for not fully exploring or representing the spectrum of sexuality in general. It's very heteronormative. And so this scene where Dax is like, oh, you know, you're a Ferengi guy and you like this other Ferengi guy. It's not a big deal. I noticed it. It's cool. And then the twist, of course, is that she's a woman. And, you know, so that is more shocking to Dax than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's easy to miss, too. So it's not like it was being too poignant about it. So, yeah, like you said, it's just an interesting little, almost like an Easter egg in there.
Yeah, it's true. If you weren't really paying attention, it's not like a giant, oh, my gosh, it's just like, whatever. Dax is like, you know, you should like whoever you like. And she's more surprised by the fact that this is a Ferengi woman who she's never met before. She's never met a Ferengi woman before. And it's been in many, this is the second season. It has been kind of told many times that Dax kind of hangs out with Ferengi and she enjoys them, but she's never hung out with a Ferengi woman because that's not what you do, apparently.
I can't remember which number of bodies this is that Dax has been a host to, or vice versa, excuse me. I think it's like 6 or 7 or something like that. So very long life. It's just interesting. I never quite understood that whole, like just to what degree Dax is the one, the character that we see, or is it the host that we see? And it's, I guess we're told that it's Dax is more the one that's there, but it's just really hard to tell sometimes. and probably that's how they wanted it.
Yes, I think that's the whole, the interesting part of the Trill is that they are a melding of their, you know, she has all of the memories and experiences of her previous, of the previous hosts, plus her own. So I guess it's, you know, and that's why it makes the interaction between her and Sisko so interesting, because Sisko obviously knew her previous host, intimately, and was basically her previous host was his mentor. So it's an interesting dynamic that now he's her commanding officer and he's older than she is, but she's kind of older than he is. It's hard to, to deal with, I would imagine, not having ever had that experience myself, but it seems like it would be difficult to adapt to.
Yeah, in some ways, I wish they'd explored that a little bit more, that dynamic. But it seems like they sort of just left it be like sort of on the back burner.
Yeah, I guess one could argue that, you know, people in the future are cool with that and able to adapt to it more readily because it's something that's not outside their experience. But I still think they probably could have spent a little more time navigating the potential rocky issues that could come up with such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also, yeah. I don't know why they got a new actress for Dax in the last season, but that's another yeah. topic well, altogether.
Exactly. But at least if there's one person that they have to replace the actor or actress for, it's the person who exists as a host to an unseen creature.
That is true.
Conveniently.
It's the Doctor Who solution for that kind of thing.
It's perfect.
There you go. It is ideal. So was there anything else in this episode that struck you? I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Well, there's no B plot really, except that the Grand Negus is hitting on Kira, but.
Right. Yeah. It's very short lived. I do like that when Quark is talking to the, I forget what that species is called. They were trying to do business with.
Oh, is it the, what is it? The Corsi?
Dosai.
Cosi? Right, Cosi.
Dosai or Cosi. Anyway.
Or Dosai.
But it's sort of like, you know, looking back at it from, you know, 2015, 2016 technology, it looks like Quark is trying to, you know, get this guy to do Apple Pay to, you know, to solidify the payment. Although I was thinking about it, I was like, well, yeah, Apple Pay, or maybe in this case, Android Pay. I mean, we see more Android in Star Trek than we do. The other, so it's I just sort of think that was funny. And also, as you mentioned, this is the first mention of the Dominion in Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at this point, because by the end of Deep Space Nine, we see that the Dominion is basically the same, you know, spoiler alert, is the same as Odo's species. And they also, you know, have enslaved or basically overtaken many other races to be included as part of the quote-unquote Dominion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much of that was sort of planned out or was even in the minds of the writers at this point in the plot. But it's just curious to see. Just mentioning it as sort of this, who knows what it is, who knows what that'll lead to. And, of course, by the end of the series, we know. But it's just, I'm always curious to think, how much did the writers know themselves? Because certainly the audience doesn't know anything at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those references where, like, if you're not really paying attention, it's just like, whatever, it's another alien race. And you have no idea that it's going to be, like, the central protagonist or antagonist, I should say, for the like several seasons of this show. The Dominion is super important in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, it's certainly one of the more malicious forces. I mean, outside of the Borg, certainly much more driven, I think, because the Borg are just sort of do stuff, whatever serves the collective. They don't attack unless they think it's necessary. They don't withdraw. Whereas the Dominion is clearly bent on, you know, taking over things, hence the name.
And they have, spoiler alerts for future seasons of Deep Space Nine, but the Founders, who is what Odo is, are shapeshifters, so they can, many episodes in future seasons, talk about how the Founders, you know, basically assassinate and then replace key personnel and infiltrate Starfleet in a way that the Borg would never do. That's not the way the Borg. The Borg are not. They're Borg are many things. They're not generally sneaky. They hail you, they tell you what they're going to do, and then they do it. That's not really what the Dominion does.
No, there's slightly different approaches there. Yeah, I'd forgotten that Odo's species is called, the Founders, and they're the ones who founded the Dominion.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And so, and the Dominion is interesting because, so it's this kind of group of alien races that the Founders have basically conquered, either economically or militarily. And they have the Jem'Hadar, which they have genetically engineered to be dependent upon them for this Chitrasil White stuff, the drugs, basically, that if they don't take them, they die. So it feels like, well, the Borg is kind of like a force of nature, and it's malevolent, and they're cool, and it's creepy. The Dominion is it seems to me, a little more of a threat than the Borg, because they are... they could be sneaky. They seem like they would, you know, they could, you could negotiate with them, but then they would just basically somehow find a way to backstab you, where you're not negotiating with the Borg. The Borg are there. They're going to assimilate you. They're going to take your biological distinctiveness and add it to their own. And that's what they're going to do. You know what the Borg are going to do.
Yeah. And, P.S. resistance is futile.
That's right. So don't even bother.
Exactly.
Whereas the Dominion's like, no, you should join us. You'll get lots of benefits from it.
Yeah, when you mentioned the Jem'Hadar and the Chitrasil White, I recall now, it's almost a similar idea to Jurassic Park, where, you know, we engineer these things to, and I don't know if it was to do our bidding or not. It was more like just for fun. But you can also deny them a certain nutrient, or in this case, lysine, I think it was. Anyway, I don't want to go too far there, but it just reminded me of that a little bit, where, you know, you make them, and then you can also force them to,
kill them off by,
Or just prevent them from going on without you. And that didn't work out very well for Jurassic Park, but I guess it seems to work well for the Founders and the Dominion.
Yeah. I think the Founders have the formula for that down. Cause I don't think the Jem'Hadar ever rise up against them, but, although there probably is a couple episodes where they do. So feel free to write in if there are, and correct me. So what did you think overall? Thoughts on Rules of Acquisition? Good episode, bad episode, somewhere in between?
Well, somewhere in between, but closer to bad, if anything. I mean, it's character driven, which is par for the course for Star Trek. I mean, it's one of the things that just makes it not just a mishmash of sci-fi and special effects. I like that there are characters who do develop, but as far as the subject matter, it's just who needs to be reminded about how bad some places in the universe are. A little too close to home for some people, I think. So,
yes.
In any case, but I enjoyed it for what it was, and it's, if it helps me get to know Quark better and hope for the best for him, then I guess it's worth watching.
And now it makes me want to know what tulip berries taste like. But
Indeed, yeah. I wonder if it's anything like Romulan ale.
Ah, yes, but that's outlawed, so we'll never know.
Of course.
Well, Jordan, thank you so much for joining me.
It was a pleasure to be here.